Tejasvinavadhitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, so then guess we continue with the Sakriya Sar, Deepika.
Yes, Maharaj. Okay, so
we only did the first verse, didn't we?
The first two verses of the introduction.
Okay, maybe just read those through again, because I don't think everybody was here for the first one.
Okay. Okay, so then the first one. Offering obeisances to Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, who is worshipped by the whole world, who is the controller of the universe, who is situated in supreme bliss, and who is the bestower of the desired goal to the unalloyed devotees, I, Gopala Bhatta, receiving the order from the saintly exalted devotees, present a manual on Vedic sanskaras called Satkriya Saradipika. By this, the householders within the Varnashrama system, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, and those outside the Varnashrama system, Chandalas, Mlechas, Yavanas, etc., can maintain the principles of Vaishnava teachings. In presenting this, I have always kept in mind the supreme position of devotional service.
Okay, so here in this invocation, then, you know, he's mentioned, okay, the deity then is Krishna, and it's about worshiping Krishna, and you can see in all the aspects how he is, you know, controls everything, he is everything. And he is the supreme bliss in that he is interacting with his devotees on that devotional platform. And then that this manual then is talking about the samskars, and these samskars are always in connection with pure devotional service and with Krishna, and that they're, and the, how you say, and the benefit is that one will be able to keep oneself nicely in the devotional process, the devotional situation. And so it's meant for devotees, you know, and it mentions also all Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. So it's not that, oh, for chanting, then it doesn't apply to us. It applies to all those who are, you know, practicing within sadhana bhakti or working within the greater social context, you know, and, you know, preaching in that context in mind. So therefore, then it's not something that, oh, it's for some and not for all. And one could say, oh, but that's for the followers of the Vedas. But he even mentioned this for devotees, even they're coming from backgrounds outside of the Vedic, the Mlechas and, you know, Yavana backgrounds. Then, you know, the Chandalas. Chandala just means that includes whatever. And so that they also can take advantage and, you know, uplift themselves, purify themselves and establish themselves in Krishna consciousness. So we can see as he's, and this is on the order of the senior authorities of him. So that means Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis, that they have ordered. So therefore, then he is writing. So it's not that he just decided, okay, well, that's his thing. No, he's been given order by the authorities, you know, who are establishing Krishna, you know, Krishna conscious for go to, you know, in the line of, you know, under the order of Lord Chaitanya, you know, for all those who then are followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Is that clear? I think it's supposed to be. Is it the Anubandha Chatushtaya? Means that's the, that analysis of the invocation, you know, so you have who the deity is, what's the ultimate goal, what's the subject matter, and who's qualified for that subject matter, and what benefits they'll get from following it. So it analyzes all those things. Yes? Okay. So please continue.
Okay, next. Sri Aniruddha Bhatta, Sri Bhima Bhatta, and Sri Govinda Nandana Bhatta have compiled manuals for the fruitive workers. Sri Narayan Bhatta also compiled one, and Sri Bhavadev Bhatta compiled one for the followers of the Samaveda. For the devotees of Lord Govinda, inside or outside of the Varnashrama system, I will explain the process of performing Vedic Sanskaras, taking evidences from the Vedas, Puranas, Manu, and other Smritis, avoiding injunctions which call for worship of the Devatas and Pitris, as this would cause Seva and Nam Aparad for the devotees.
Yeah, so then you see here also, again, he's taking out anything that would distract one from devotional service and commit offense, and just keeping it to the pure worship of Krishna, through the medium of the samskaras, but it's still worship of Krishna. Please.
Okay, so then after these four verses, he gives then commentary. It is not proper
One second. Jagadish Prabhu? Sure.
Hare Krishna, I have a question. The list of previous authorities, are they all Mimamsakas or Karmakandis? Who are they?
By the sounds of it, that they're Bengalis or South Indians like that, but they have, they've written, he says, for those who are fruitive workers. So he's written it for those following Karma Mimamsa, because even before, many times, if they weren't established, then the Karma Mimamsa would be followed, the rituals would be followed by the devotees, but they weren't, interested in fruitive results. So then on the order of Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis, then now he's established the samskaras, how they would be used, in the line of pure devotion by pure devotees in the most natural way. And so, he's mentioned whoever's there, just that they have written these things. So, but this padati is written so that it takes out anything that's not recommended, like worship of the Pitris and worship of the demigods. So that's considered not important, means one avoids it, So that kind of thing, one there. So it's interesting to note that somehow or another, we're being more broad and everything like that. Broad means not Vaishnav. So if we're being broad-minded or being, the more soft kind of preaching approach, then we can accept the Malecha cultures, the Chandala cultures and whatever they're doing. We can accept the Vedic cultures as, that's not about pure devotion. It's just about fruitive work like that. We might even acknowledge, from the academics point of view, they might even acknowledge some of the speculative elements of the Jnanis, but the pure devotion, the essence of it, that will avoid, because if we deal with that, then that's hard preaching. And that would be, disturbing and annoying to the Malechas and Yavanas, who know zero about the Vedic culture and, who therefore can, distinguish between, what's pure devotion. Oh, you're just a bunch of Haris and fanatics. And then those who are demigod worshipers and all these other ritualistic things. And, oh, that's okay. So the interesting thing is, when you bring it to pure devotion, that's actually the more gentle preaching. And when you take it away to all these other aparavidyas, that requires actual material qualification to be involved in and all that. That's actually a harder preaching. The smartos will take that side. And they won't give any space that any of these chandalas and everybody can even use it, touch it, let alone look at it. Hear about it. So it's very, very interesting how the mode of ignorance switches everything upside down. So the name is soft preaching. Actually, they're preaching what in India would be, more militant, and they're leaving aside pure devotion, and which is actually the more accommodating and gentle approach. So it's very interesting how the avidya potency works and bewilders the living entities if they don't follow in Parampara. As Prabhupada points it out, that's our technology. Parampara is our technology. Anything else, that's for the demons. Yes, please.
Yesterday, Tathavad Prabhu asked me to present something on Narada Pancharatra because he said, you know, most of our work is based on that. Then I went through a little bit the scan through the Narada Pancharatra. My question or observation is that this Satkriya is written like, you know, how to see the Vedic method in connection with Lord Vishnu.
Yes.
Because
yes.
All the other books before, like whether it's Narada Pancharatra, Higher Shisha, they're all like how to see the Pancharatra in terms of pure devotional service to Vishnu.
Yes, yes, yes.
In that sense, this is like, you know, more broader and then bringing everything else also in.
Yes, yes. So it means as you go up, it gets broader. But the thing is here is that it's been reduced down that only pure devotees would appreciate the Satkriya Sar. Those who have any other motives, they're the ones that are going to reject it. So if devotees say, oh, we chant and we don't care for that, unless they're one of these hardcore brahmacharis who just distributes books and, you know, chews on chunks of wood for breakfast, otherwise everything else is Maya. If anyone other than that says that, they're cheating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, because they're working nicely within Varnashram. Mm-hmm. You know, they're being respected because they're a senior devotee. They're being respected because they're a sannyasi or they hold a position like temple president or GBC. They're taking all the advantages of the Varnashram system as long as they get benefit. And then on other sides where it controls them and regulates them, then they reject it. You know, so other than that hardcore, he has nothing. And, you know, that kind of guy, who just all he's focused on is that direct aspect and that. And then he says, oh, this is all Maya because he's not married yet. Then he doesn't have to use it. But anybody else who's the householders, naturally they'd use it because that falls within the Varnashram system. So therefore it's controlled by the Vedic. So yes, the Pancharatrik then is regulating the lifestyle, and that is based on the Chaturvyuha, and how, you know, all these other aspects of Prajumna, Shankarsham, Prajumna, Adiruddha, all these fields of action or understandings of the field of action are being used to serve in devotion the Lord for his pleasure and his pastime. So that becomes the central point of the management system. That's where you could say it's coming from Narada Pancharatra. But you can also go back and say before that Vedanta Sutra and these others who establish Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana, because unless you understand that, you won't actually understand the Chaturvyuha. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's going to go like that. So it's just, I think it's that came up just because people are asking, where do you get this from? You know, because they always have to. They haven't heard of it, don't know about it. You know, that, oh, where do you get it from? Even though if they all agree on something, you say, where do you get it from? They can't say at all, you know, other than, yeah, I saw it on internet, you know, like that. Some guy on some politician on CNN or some, you know, like that was talking about it. You know.
Generally, I see the mood of the person, and if he's like being proud of his knowledge, oh, if I don't know, where is it from? Like, then I throw far out things. I say, well, you know, it's mentioned Lakshmi Tantra here, Vishnu Puran, and then I go out book after book and we're like, just embarrass him that he didn't study all.
Yes. No, it's always fun like that. It's always fun. That's always the thing. I mean, nowadays, you have to be, you know, quite careful about it. Before it would be, you know, when someone says, oh, yeah, but, you know, after you go to the toilet, you know, I have to wash hands like this. And then I go, no, it says this. And then I'll name everything it takes to do it. You know, because first you wash just you're going to wash, you know, the cavities of the body and this and that and these kind of things. Then you're going to wash just your left hand. Then after washing that, then you wash your right hand. Then you wash the both together. And it gives the numbers of times. You know, it's like significant. How many times the left, how many times the right. And each time means you're putting mud and rinsing it. Putting mud, rinsing it. You know, so it gets quite serious. And so when you do that, then generally that shuts them up. So that was the old where you they say something, you just pull out something and whack them over the head with it. But now I say, see what you're doing, that's much more refined and much more, would be appreciated by the other one. The other one just freaks them out. What you're doing then actually, like you said, yeah, they're not as well, as well read as they would like to think they are.
Also, Maharaj, just one more point, if it's not, distracting very much. In the Narad Pancharatra, it's mentioned about the five aspects of the Supreme Lord. It talks about that para, vyuha, and vibhava, and antaryami, and archa. These are the five forms of the Lord. Like,
yes.
And it's exactly what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discusses about basically Swayam Bhagavan and then Tadekatma. Within the Tadekatma, then the Vilasa form is referring to the Vyuha, and then
right.
The Vipavas can be in both Vilasa and then Swamshas. And Antaryami is the three forms of Paramatma, which we discuss all about.
Yes.
And the Archa is the Archa Vigraha deity form. Then
the deity, yes.
So basically, the core of the philosophy is like, repeated again and again and everywhere. If we catch that, then we can see the, the consistency in everything. And can also appreciate how different ways we can serve the Lord by expanding our, expanding our zones or area of
influence. Yeah. It means it's the use of the secondary. In other words, the Bhagavat is describing that aspect of the philosophy directly from the aspect of that pure devotion to Krishna. Then these other literatures that are there, though Pancharatra is a transcendental literature, still it's written in that form that brings in the aspect of the, the ritual and that kind of aspect like that. You know, and Vedanta Sutra then will explain it, through the aspect of logic or nyaya. And so you're going to have that, what's the Bhagavatam saying, that's going to be the natural form of it. Then these others are forms that will be appreciated by certain personalities. Then as you go down into the Aparavidya, then you see, in Ayurveda and Jyotish and the Yajnas and the Vedic mantras and all those kind of things, the grammar, it's the exact same things being explained, but now through the medium of that particular point of knowledge. And then in that, because it's seen in the context of that branch of knowledge, it will be explaining the same thing, but using the words of that subject matter. So then one is for the overall, like you were saying, the samasti, is that people think that they're different, they're actually completely different topics, when actually they're just different perspectives on viewing the same one topic. So people then argue one against the other and all this foolishness. And then from the Vyasti point of view, it means these different things then address how your conditioning, what it particular is, because it'll be attracted by one of these or a combination of these books of Vedic knowledge, that you can therefore connect your conditioning as a secondary supportive action to the primary of that pure devotion to Krishna. So you can perform that pure devotional activity with the support of the particular religious principles that, you can are comfortable with at this particular point in your conditioning in the situation you're in. Yes? No?
Maharaj.
Yeah. So that was the idea, to extend it out so you see that very clearly. So that would be the thing to see there, is that you have that and it's comparing it to the Chaitanya Charitamrita and all that. And the details of the other means that's the main book. You know, there's five topics or five books in the Pancharatra. So the one will be Jnana. And so all this will be explained, how that supreme absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead, has then descended as the Archa. That's its home point. Then it's going to be then how you know, and what that pure devotion, how it's all expressed and all that. Then it's going to be how you deal with the Lord on a daily, you know, worship, how you deal on occasional worship, how you deal on, you know, your own personal, you know, maintenance and everything like that, how your lifestyle and everything like that. And, and then I think it's, maybe festivals, something like that. But it has these different aspects to bring out. And so those, the technical details of those aren't important. It's more just the concepts of them, the philosophical, and how that is all very much part of the devotee's life. And if you go into it, you see is all that's been given. So if you go into all these Vedic literatures on that level, from that point, that descending aspect where you're just taking that essence of what is pure devotion and how it's explained in that particular topic, you'll see that all those books, they're all saying the same thing. And whatever's been given is described in Srimad Bhagavatam, is described by the Acharyas, and is described by Srila Prabhupada. So everything's been given. Detail, that's if you need it, you learn the detail. Just like we know that a car is for getting us from one point to point A to point B. It's not for sense gratification, so you don't be crazy. You drive nicely, follow the rules so that everybody, you know, things go smoothly and all that. Then if someone is of the position where they would learn to drive, then they can get into the details of, you know, all the different things. So that first point is the actual important point. Because if you know that, then your approach to driving, or even if you're not driving, you understand it's for that. So you won't disturb the driver. You won't, you know, try to come up with other kinds of things. Or if you are a driver, you'll do it properly. So the detail is just so that you can operate it, but you're operating as a secondary to support the primary. Is that good? Yes. So that's a very nice point. It's amazing how consistent the whole Vedic literature is, but you'll only see the consistency if you come in at the top like this, as Lord Chaitanya and the Acharyas explain it. But if you come in like the scholars go, you'll never understand them all and all that. So that's why a devotee could know the essence of all of them, and even, you know, what is makes them unique, why it's called that scripture. And even give direction to people who will function in those areas, how what they're doing, their detail connects to the absolute truth, though they don't know the full extent of the details. But those, you know, so for them, it's one topic. But for the scholars, then those who identify in that way, it's 14 different books. It's 14 different things. And even within that, there's differences and this and that, and it's all that, and it's all confusing. So if anybody is good at many of them, that's considered so special. Like we see, I think it was Vishwamitra. Then he had studied, you know, I guess once he decided he's going to be a Brahmin, and not only a Brahmin, but a Brahma Rishi, then he had studied all these literatures very nicely. And so then when Janaka Raj, you know, one of the 12 Mahajanas, was having a sacrifice, and all these great personalities who were there, they naturally discuss about the Vedic topics and conclusions and all that. And so in that, then it came up, you know, because naturally him being a pure devotee and one of the, as Prabhupada points it, he's one of the GBCs of the universe. You know, in other words, he's the see that everybody's following pure devotional service. So on that level, that's the GBC's business, right? So he's one of the 12 GBCs in the universe. And so then, you know, in their kind of direction, well, you know, who actually knows all the scriptures and knows the conclusion and all that. So then they go through and different people start bringing up different topics, and then it goes, and then finally different people, they don't know so much, and it comes out that Vishwamitra, anything you ask him on any Shastra, he knows the detail. Like that, you can take some obscure Brahmana and some obscure section in the Brahmana and ask a detail about, you know, to use this spoon or that spoon or, you know, on this and that. He knows all that. And so then no one has any more questions, because, you know, anybody, whatever's to the degree that they know the scriptures, they've already asked Vishwamitra and he's answered and given it all. So then Janaka Rishi asks, is there anybody else who would like to, you know, question, you know, just the vastness of knowledge of Vishwamitra? So then at that point, Gargi, then she stands up and says, I would like to ask some questions. You know, so she waited till everybody else finished. And then at the end, since no one else is there, she asked, and you know, what's about? So she started asking about transcendental knowledge. He didn't know one, you know, drop. He knew nothing. And so as she was asking different ways to try to get something out of him, he just is going more and more frustrated and more upset. So seeing that and being a pure devotee, then Uttamadakari, she could see this. So just immediately she just announced that Vishwamitra is the greatest scholar in the assembly. He knows, you know, the vastest, you know, amount of knowledge and all that, and that he should be respected by anybody. And then sat down. So, in other words, he knew all the details of everything, but he had no idea what the actual conclusion and purpose was. No idea. So that must have been the idea of Janaka and of Gargi, is that, you know, to bring that out, because that's brought out so that you understand that there's transcendence is beyond, the devotional service, the knowledge of the Lord is beyond. So that's actually the most important. And the other is if it's necessary for either your particular service, or you just have interest and you can help advise people who are applying these, then the more you know, the better. But if you don't know the essence, then it can become distract one from devotional service. That's the point, because otherwise one will take the religious aspect as the prominent and not the bhakti as the prominent. Yes. You had a question?
Yes, Guru Maharaj. I have two questions. First question is, why other munis, they didn't ask transcendental questions? Does it mean they didn't have, or because they knew that Vishwamitra Muni can't give an answer?
That I'm not sure. I mean, the details of that might come up in some other explanation of the story. So in here, you're just pointing out that the transcendental knowledge is actually the highest. Even if you're the greatest scholar, if you don't know Krishna, then it's all lost. It's like that story of the, Prabhupada tells of the boatman and the scholar. You know, so the scholars, do you know this, you know, like that? And the boatman, I'm just an ordinary boatman. What do I know of this? You know, so they, oh, you know, half of your life is wasted. And do you know this and that? Oh, 75% of your life is wasted. Then a storm comes and they're out in the middle of the river. And then the boatman says, do you know how to swim? Because this storm's going to, you know, sink the boat. And he said, no. And so the boatman looked at the scholar and said, 100% of your life is wasted. You know, because he knew so much, but he didn't know anything practical. So that's what's being brought out here. There might be another explanation of the story that brings something detailed. So I've seen in the Vedic literatures, you know, the Puranas and that, and then especially they tell the story, how much of the story is necessary to establish the point and don't go any more. Because going more than distract. So sometimes one story is told from many, many different angles. So, you know, like, you know, the story there's that lady, and her husband is crippled. So she has to carry him around, and somehow or another, he's got attracted to a prostitute. He's the best prostitute, and he would like to, you know, how you say, visit her. And so then the wife goes to the prostitute and says, you know, relates what's there, and says, but unfortunately, you know, we're poor, so we're just poor Brahmins, we don't have any money, so I can, you know, come every day and do some, you know, free work for you, you know, help around here or something like that. So then the prostitute said, no, don't worry about it. We're going to teach this guy a lesson. Right. And so then when he comes and he sits and she, you know, things are arranged, nicely cooked things and bathes nicely. And she comes and then serves him a meal. And every preparation is served twice, once in a solid gold bowl and once in an iron bowl. And after a while, he notices, why are you serving the same preparation twice? You know, like that. Because, you know, she said, one's in a gold bowl and one's in the iron bowl. And he says, but they taste exactly the same. And she said, exactly. So interaction, you know, with a woman, whether it's, you know, your wife or whether it's, you know, someone like herself who is a celebrated, you know, society girl, the taste is the same. Why are you thinking it's different? So we've heard that story, right? Then we've heard the story of, another one, you know, it's about that aspect. Another one's about the chaste women, right? You know, the five most chaste women in the universe. Then the one is she's, carrying her husband, and they're going by this place where somebody is on this pole. They've been impaled on a pole, and they, are in deep meditation. They wake up, and in waking up, then they smell this very bad smell, so they think that they're in their ashram and that the demons are coming and you know, throwing stool, urine, and garbage on the ashram like they always do. And so he curses at whoever is, you know, creating this bad smell, meaning he thinks the demons, they will die before the sun, you know, when the sun comes up. You know, and so that lady then, you know, by her chastity, the sun can't rise. You know, Surya goes to step into his chariot. He can't, like he's frozen in place. He can't step on the chariot. Therefore, the sun can't rise. And then all the demigods are freaking out, this, that. They all go to Brahma. Brahma figures out what's happening, comes to the lady and says, if the sun doesn't rise, all the living entities in the universe will die. You know, without the sun, life won't go on. And she tells Lord Brahma that that's your problem. You're in charge of all the living entities. This is my husband. I'm in charge of him. So I'm saving my husband. You worry about the rest of the universe. That's your problem. So then he says, okay, we'll make a deal. You let the sun rise, he'll die. But then I'll bring him back to life in a new body, because as it is, he's a leper. That's why he smells so bad. You know, he's a cripple. He's a leper. He'll have a new, fresh, you know, young body and all that. And then he'll be able to. So with that, she agreed, right? Only because her husband would benefit. Then we have another story where we have, a sage, he's in his ashram, and some thieves are being chased by the police, the constables, and they run and hide in the ashram. So then the constables, you know, figure out they're in the ashram. They go in there, and they find them, and they also see the sage there meditating, and they think that this sage is actually another one of the thieves, and he's just looking like he's a sadhu, just as this is their, you know, their front, you know, their cover, that, you know, they're all people of the ashram and the sage and this and that, when actually they're all thieves. So they take everybody, the thieves and the sage. They go to the king, and he says, you know, you put them all, impale them all on these stakes. So they do that. And so then afterwards, then the sage goes to Yamaraj, and then says to him, says, why have I been impaled on this stick? He says, because when you were 5 years old, you took a sharp pointed stick and you pierced an ant. And then he cursed them that, you know, you're supposed to be, you know, one of the leaders of the universe, and you're making up these foolish things. I mean, you're viewing it in that, the five-year-old, he doesn't know. So then he cursed them that he would become a Shudra. And he also then said that, you know, yeah, and then, so that would be one. So another one, aspect of the story is that, then from him came the thing, the rule that no, whatever nonsense the kids do up to the age of 16 or 13, depending upon when they figure out about girls and get involved with girls, then all the reactions go to the parents. The kid doesn't get the reactions, right? And so then, so it's better for parents if the kids aren't involved in these things, because then they go to 16, then they become adults. So then as an adult, now it's their reactions. But if they let their kids just do whatever they like and hang out and do all the, you know, the modern stuff, then as soon as they turn 13, all the nonsense that goes, means everything, you know, everything is there. Now it goes to them, right? So then we see that, you know, and then we see, then there's another story where the Yamaraj is being cursed, and he comes down, he becomes Vidura, right? So we've heard all these different stories. Right? That's all one story. That's all one story. That the leper, the crippled leper, you know, his wife is one of the five chaste women in the universe. She arranged the thing of the prostitute in the morning, you know, early morning, because that's when you generally leave the prostitute's place, when everybody's still in their house, because when it's dark and you leave, because you're leaving the day, everyone will go, hey, you know, like this. So you leave early. So then she's bringing your husband back. He's the one that smells bad. And that's that, whoever, I think, Manduka Muni, he's the one that's impaled on there because the king said that, you know, they thought he was a thief and all that. And then, you know, that whole thing with the sun not rising. And then he's the one that after that whole thing went to Yamaraj and said, what's going on here? Well, this is nonsense. You understand? So these three stories are all one story. But the Vedas will tell it, the Puranas, depending on which part is coming out. We're talking about the chastity of women. You tell that part of the story. You're telling about, you know, the aspect of, we think that we're getting this variety of sense gratification, but it's the same thing. The experience is the same. It doesn't matter what it is. So, you know, the dog sleeping on the street, he's found a nice place, you know, out of the way. He's as comfortable or more comfortable than the man sitting in the penthouse suite in his fancy bed and all that kind of stuff like that. There's no difference. The experience is the same. So that's the thing. When you're sleeping, you don't know where you are. So that depth of sleep, then it's the same. Like that. And then the Mandukya Muni is that if you're an authority and you're dealing in that, you have to make proper things. You can't do. So Prabhupada uses that as an example. It's that, that's where it comes from, telling that story. Then Prabhupada says he's one of the GBCs of the universe. But because he didn't act properly, he became a Shudra. So therefore he said, if the GBC, you know, like that doesn't act properly, they'll fall to the level of Shudras. Like that, you know, so these are bringing out different aspects. So that's the one thing, is that they'll tell only that part of the story that's necessary. So in here, they're bringing out the part of the story, how the transcendental subject matter is actually the highest level. And so Gargi, who's known, you know, Vedanta Sutra gives her as the example, is the Uttamadikari. And Janaka Raj is one of the Mahajans. And so they know. They understand this. Does that make sense? So other details, then that story didn't tell. So what others are thinking, this and that, why they said that, I'm not sure. But there's a good chance they may or may not have known themselves, because she's the one, she and Janaka were the ones known as the devotees.
Guru Maharaj, is that okay? Guru Maharaj, yes, thank you very much, I understood. Guru Maharaj, but I want to ask about application of culture in this story. When Gargi finally
your audio
saved.
Cut out.
Audio, just say, repeat, audio. Just repeat what you said, the audio cut out.
Guru Maharaj, I want to ask about application of culture in this story. When Gargi glorified Vishwamitra Muni in the end, in Bhagavad Gita it was written that our speech should be pleasant and honest, truthful.
Yes.
And in this story, it was pleasant, but maybe not so much truthful. And I have question in such...
No, but it is truthful.
Truthful.
Because when it comes to the secondary aspects of religion and those things, those details, he knows more than anybody. But when it comes to transcendence, transcendence is beyond. Transcendence is truth. The other is facts. Transcendence is truth. So when we say truthful, then it has the aspect is that, you know, as much as possible, I mean, it should be in context of Krishna. That's actually truthful. And then how much of the secondary facts are important for the person, you know, in their position and everything, then that much is told. Like that. So Krishna says in the Gita that don't disturb the minds of the ignorant. So, whoever it is, I think it's Vishwamitra, then they're ignorant of beyond that. So on the material platform, he's the most knowledgeable person, but on the platform of transcendence, he's the least known. Like, just like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the greatest scholar on that secondary platform in India at the time, but he didn't know transcendence. And then, you know, the greatest sannyasi and Vedantist and all that was Prakashananda Saraswati. They didn't understand actual transcendence either. So it's beyond. So truth means how it connects to Krishna. Truth doesn't mean facts, because otherwise then they just say, you know, okay, you've studied all these things, you know all these things, but you don't know what's the absolute truth, therefore you're an idiot. So is that going to do anything? It's going to benefit anything? Because he's not a devotee. Not at least not at that time. You know? And so then what's the point? You point out about how transcendence in that. So that's why then you're working with devotees and that, and there's an area within that aspect of pure devotion they don't know. You try to explain it. They don't catch it, then whatever level that they can catch it at, that they see that whatever they're doing, how to connect it to Krishna, you leave it at that. Because the point is if it's about relation, it's about relationship, not facts. Truth, when we say satyam, that means Lakshmi. Purusha is Krishna, satyam is Lakshmi. Murubhubhaswa, now that's the material worlds. You know, so therefore, then satyam, that means Lakshmi. So in other words, real truth is how it connects to Krishna. That's then mentioned in the first verse of Bhagavatam. Being able to distinguish matter from spirit, that's real knowledge. So that's satyam dhimahi. Krishna is satyam. Lakshmi is satyam. Because in other words, Krishna has the absolute truth that everything is him, is satyam. But now how you as an individual act in relationship with that person in devotion, then that's the Abhideya Satyam. He's the existence Satyam. And then that's the Abhideya Satyam. And then Prema, then how that exchange of love between the Lord and his energies based on that Abhideya, then that's the Prayojana. That's Prema. So if they only know that lower level, and that's but they're, you know, trying to engage in Krishna service, simply show them how to nicely engage what they're doing Krishna service and leave what's above that. Does that make sense?
Yes, Guru Maharaj. I want to clarify one point about culture, because there is this story is little bit like some of my question. For example, if we are in some assembly of devotees and devotees discuss some philosophical question in Krishna consciousness, and someone will promote some bogus philosophy for the name of Krishna consciousness and change some principles, should we say something right, or because we are in because we are women, we shouldn't say anything against opinion of the men?
No, it can be said, but it just has to be said pleasantly and nicely, like it mentions about the feminine nature is the sweet speech. So the point is that to say it nicely, just like, let's say, just for example, now let's say a woman, she wants to get something done by another person. She really wants to get something done, right? And this other person is someone who can either do or accomplish something. So she's going to come in and use the nicest way of saying things, the most pleasant tone of voice, words and everything to accomplish that. You understand? So it's a very efficient method. This idea, no, we just speak straight, it's not an efficient method. It's not actually very efficient. I've used it for years. You just, like I said before, somebody says something crazy, you smack them over the head. You just bring out a steep roller and roll them flat. That's how, in the 70s and 80s, that's how the preaching worked in India. And in those days, people, because they had, kind of faith in the scriptures and in authority, it worked really good on them. They appreciated it. They took it as, confident in this and that. Nowadays, you just sneeze in the wrong way and people freaking out, they're already offended, So, because you're not, your mask or this or that, or, you're trying to kill them or whatever. So therefore, then you're going to say something very nicely, trying to bring that out and make the point. Those who are honest, those who are more sincere, they'll catch what you're saying. And if the person, the particular person, doesn't catch it, then you just show how what they're talking about, the aspects of its connection to Krishna, or you just leave it at that. So many times, I don't know if you remember before, is that we'd be in the class and we'd have such a wide range of audience, and somebody would ask some very, very unique kind of question. And you'd give the answer, everyone in the room would understand, but the person that you're talking to didn't. So you just stop at that point. So in other words, others understood, they didn't, there's nothing more you can do. So the etiquette is there. It means if it's of any value that you can say something, you do. If not, you don't. And if it's like that and it's bogus and you can't say anything, then if the opportunity is there, then it's recommended you leave. And no one can tell you you can't leave. You have to go to the bathroom or, something. There's always, ladies always have good excuses. So you just leave. If you can see it's bogus, you can then done. If there's an opportunity to say something, you try to say and like that, but nicely. And then if it doesn't work, then you just leave it. If they continue to talk, then you leave. Just thank you, and then you go. So the point is, the etiquette is there. Is you're always that assembly of Vaishnavas. You're always trying to talk nicely. You're always trying to talk. This modern thing of, because it's truth, I can say it any way I want, that's just uncultured. It's nice that they're trying to be straightforward and get to the point. But the thing is if that point is not actually correct, in the philosophy and the etiquette, and the religion, then there's a problem. But the thing is nowadays, why not? Why the ladies can't bring something up if it's wrong? We see Gargi brought it up. Is that good?
Yes, Guru Maharaj, thank you very much.
Okay. So, yes, so, okay, so then, yes, then we can continue.
Okay, so this is just beginning Gopala Bhatta Goswami's commentary on these four verses.
Okay.
It is not proper for me to write my own name as the compiler of this book, as others would do, for I fear becoming bewildered by false ego. As the Bhagavad Gita states, those who are bewildered by the false ego think themselves the doer, 327. But by the order of the saintly devotees of this sampradaya, I am obliged to write my name as Gopal Bhatta. This spirit soul, having tasted the nectar of the service of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna Chaitanya, always follows the instructions of the devotees.
So in here, because some people will say, oh, that's written by a different Gopal Bhatta. It's not our Gopal Bhatta. That's always brought up, because that will generally come from if there is any need, that may come from, you know, Sahajiyas or sometimes caste Goswamis or things like that, because devotees unnecessarily associate with people that are not recommended. So they hear these things and it creates a doubt. And that's exactly why they say it, the created doubt. So here is that Gopal Bhatta Goswami himself is said on the basis of authority. And one could say is, oh, but it could be that, and he is going by his authority. Then one is that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he published the book and said, this is our Gopal Bhatta Goswami. So therefore, on his authority, that's why then we're going to know that it is our Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And therefore, his authorities will be Rupa Sanatan, you know, or possibly even, you know, Raghunath Das, like this. So he's going to take it in that way. And so we're going to see it like that. But we also have to understand the caste Goswami, Sahaja, they don't like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then the caste Goswamis have a problem, because then they were directly pointed out that they weren't doing well. So in Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they kind of tried to bring out the aspect of pure devotion again, since they've been lost, because the caste Goswamis, it wasn't about that. It was about, you know, their prestige and position and everything. So then we can see is why there would be that natural, creation of doubts by these quarters, and try to, you know, influence them and poison the movement against such authority. But Gopal Bhatta Goswami himself is saying that it's not proper to say, because you're just compiling, what is being done there. So it's not mine, but they've asked me to do this. So therefore I have to say on the order of the acharyas, the previous acharyas, am therefore then doing this work. Is that okay? Yes. Okay. Then we can continue.
Here, the author begins to explain the previous verses phrase by phrase. With these qualifications, I offer my obeisances unto Lord Sri Krishna. The meaning of the word Krishna has been explained above. What is the form of Krishna? That form which is full of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, beyond the modes of material nature, beyond all speech. Krishna is all attractive, full of sweetness and beauty, the very form of happiness. He is thus to be worshipped.
Just one thing, it was interesting just to note that it seems to be also quite a standard thing, even though the modern scholars can't understand this at all. But, you know, from their point of view. But he's written the invocation. Now he puts his own commentary on that. We see that in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Is that he wrote, I think it was 17 verses, and then spent, you know, most of the Adi Lila explaining it, taking it verse by verse and bringing out the thing. So here he's given these four verses, and then from that he will explain basically the rest of the introduction. We'll talk about all this. And so it's the commentary on his work, you know. So it's not something that the modern use, they all put it all together. But here you see, if you have the essence, you can read it just there, then they'll give the commentary. And so then because otherwise it said, why don't they just, he doesn't write the commentary in with the work, because then if you spread those four verses out for the full full introduction, which I think is 60, 70 pages, you might not catch those four verses, how he's saying that is an essence. So that's given first, you know, just like you have the Vedanta Sutra, and then you have its commentary, Srimad Bhagavatam, and you have the, you know, that Sanatana Goswami has written his Brihad Bhagavatamrita, then he writes his commentary. You know, or he writes, you know, other works of himself, and then he writes his commentary. So in other words, he wants to get down the essential points, and then the commentary then supports it. Does that make sense? So we see it's very, very standardly Goswami's, and so just like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, in that same kind of line, he is then using the same method. Please.
Okay. He is thus to be worshipped by the whole universe. Jagatam Sevya means that he is worshipable by all because he is always full of all powers, such as Anima and Laghima, and is full of all happiness. As he is the Supreme Lord, he is worshipable not only by all the inhabitants of the universe, such as Brahma, but also by the avatars, such as the universal form. As Krishna, complete with six opulences, is beyond the modes of matter, he is worshipable by Matsya and other avatars. What more can be said? He is even more worshipable by Narayana of Vaikuntha and by Karna Shai Mahavishnu, what to speak of the devatas. Why is this? Because he is the very form of bliss, Paramanandam. Among all those living in the material world, for the hankering devotees fixed in worship of the Lord, he is bliss itself. He only gives that bliss to those devotees who, with great desire, are fully dedicated to himself alone and to no other Vaishnavas, what to speak of others.
Yes. So here, because, you know, Brahma's a Vaishnav, Shiva's a Vaishnav, Indra's Vaishnav. So that's what he means by other Vaishnavs. So we only see them in connection with to Krishna. So you always see it in that aspect of the relationship with Krishna. So here, as he's bringing out that he, as the person, he is everything. He is Satchitananda. So everything is, you see, the cause of manifestation is manifest through that, you know, chit, and then it creates that chit, then creates the sat aspects, you know, these, what are all the existence of everything. And so then, you know, the living entities then, you know, can perform in various situations actions, but the happiness they gain from it, they can't create. You know, I mean, they haven't even created the situation of the potency, but they're thinking, if I do this, I'll become happy. But no, because happiness, Krishna is rasa. He is happiness. He is bliss. So only when it's connected with him, you get some bliss. So if you follow his rules in that, you'll get a little bit more than if you don't. But the actual form of bliss, that is only appreciated by the pure devotees who worship him exclusively and nothing else, only him. So this is going to be a very important point why he's going to spend, you know, the next basically 50 pages explaining how we don't worship the demigods, because even though they may be Vaishnavs, but the point is that it's not exclusive. It's Krishna and them, like they're going to give. No, Krishna's give. He's the source of Sat. He's the source of Chit. He's the source of Ananda. So that's the point that comes back. Yes? We're good? Are we on time? Okay, so it looks like the time is. So we'll continue then tomorrow. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.